Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on food irradiation when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held that same view. Here's what he said in Matthew 24, verse 22. He said, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive." Now, there are 64 life-threatening problems described in the Bible, just detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide agenda. And the Scripture teaches preparation for this great tribulation, not just apathy and indifference. And that's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to our God and a whole lot less to all these crazy scientists and philosophers, preachers and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and the New World Order and Bible prophecy, it's a four-hour commentary that I put together on my general law package. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now and order yours. The number is 417-273-4967. And I also teach a subsistence and survival school, which is available on compact disc for adult home education. If you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine, send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of food irradiation. The Department of Agriculture puts out a paper here, frequently asked questions about food irradiation. They have 17 questions here. What is food irradiation? What is the status of food irradiation in the United States and abroad? How are foods affected by irradiation? How are humans affected by eating irradiated food? Is electron beam or X-ray irradiation better than nuclear irradiation? And why is irradiation used on foods? Who supports and who opposes irradiation? What does labeling have to do with irradiation? What's wrong with the food that has to be irradiated? And what is the scientific evidence in favor of or against food irradiation? What are the environmental effects of irradiating food? What are the socioeconomic and global issues involved in food irradiation? What is the status of irradiation in other countries around the world? How many countries in the world permit food irradiation? What strategies are irradiation supporters using to convince the public that irradiation is harmless and desirable? Can airport X-rays harm raw foods? And what can I do to help? And I still don't know enough to come to a definite conclusion for or against food irradiation. 17 topics here in the document. We're up to number 10. What is the scientific evidence in favor of or against food irradiation? That's where we cut it off last time. Well, the scientific evidence on human health effects is inadequate to prove that irradiation is safe. In approving poultry for irradiation, the FDA used only 7 studies out of 441 studies submitted, and these all have obvious methodological flaws or showed health effects in animals. There have been no studies on humans longer than 15 weeks. In approving fruits and vegetables for irradiation, the FDA decided that the doses were too low to show animal health effects. So it used a theoretical calculation of the number of URPs created based on a 7.5-ounce serving of irradiated food daily. They then decided that this would have no human health effects. And obviously this estimate is way too low, and in addition, a chemist has calculated that even this amount of irradiated food daily, that's one large apple, would eventually weaken your liver, which would have to process a higher load of carcinogenic and mutagenic URPs. The key point is that the safety of food irradiation cannot be guaranteed by the scientific research existing in the year 2002. Scientific research changes. Absence of proof of effect is not proof of absence of effect. If scientists do not do studies that seek to measure unique radiologic products produced by irradiation, they cannot say that a diet containing these products is safe or harmful. And without labels, they can't separate people who eat irradiated food from people who don't, and then examine the health of both groups. Number 11, what are the environmental effects of irradiating food? Well, if nuclear materials are used, radioactivity may be released in plant accidents and transport. The record is not reassuring. In the United States alone, nuclear accidents have already occurred at food irradiating plants. For example, a cesium-137 spill in the state of Georgia cost the taxpayers $47 million to clean up. Because the nuclear materials will be owned by private companies, they will have a financial incentive to dump those materials without paying the regulatory fees. This has already occurred numerous times. Nuclear irradiators can legally release small amounts of radioactivity into the environment. We're already exposed to increased radioactivity from atomic weapons testing fallout and nuclear plant releases. So the question remains, do we want more radiation? Now, electron beam facilities do not have environmental effects except for consuming large amounts of electricity. However, both nuclear and electronic high-energy beams can injure or kill exposed workers. And irradiation keeps our environmentally unsustainable system of meat and poultry production from collapsing under the weight of lawsuits for food poisoning. And eventually, the few bacteria that survive this irradiation process will multiply and then work their way back into the food chain. And when that happens, irradiation doses will have to be increased, damaging the foods in new and untested ways. Number 12. So what are the socioeconomic and global issues involved in this food irradiation? Well, E-beam and X-ray facilities are cheaper to operate than nuclear facilities, and they do not carry the dangers or the stigma of using nuclear material. Therefore, they're being used first. However, once irradiation is established, hundreds or thousands of irradiation facilities will be built. Nuclear material will be privatized and used, both cobalt-60 and cesium-137. The Department of Energy has, at this time, decided not to reopen the nuclear fast flux test facility in Hanford, Washington, which is sitting on a very contaminated site. The FFTF could bring in money by manufacturing cobalt-60 from cobalt-59 for food irradiation, which is now being done in Canada. However, this may change. There's not enough cobalt-60 now for widespread use around the world. In countries with expensive or unreliable electricity, either cobalt-60 or cesium-137, which is a byproduct of nuclear weapons manufacturing, will be used. Therefore, in the big picture, any widespread use of irradiation encourages the continued use of nuclear power. Radiation-resistant food bacteria like E. coli may emerge. Some food bacteria survive irradiation, and another species of radiation-resistant bacteria already exists at this time. Gene transfer between food bacteria and the resistant bacteria is also very possible. To be profitable, radiation requires large amounts of food to be processed in centralized facilities. The use of irradiation speeds up the centralization of our food system. Small farmers are at a disadvantage because retailers and manufacturers will prefer the reliability of irradiated food from the large companies that can afford to do it. And because third world people usually depend on a few foods like wheat or yams, irradiating just one of these staple foods means that a large percentage of their diet will be irradiated for years and years to come. If irradiation becomes widespread, plants will be genetically engineered so that their food products will have a better taste, smell, and texture after the irradiation process is over, even if the nutritional content decreases. And it is possible that some of these new plants will be patented to need irradiation in order to grow. So what is the status of irradiation in other countries around the world? It is now legal in at least 35 countries, for example, in Russia, cereals, South Africa, fruits and vegetables, Belgium, spices and food ingredients, France, spices, mechanically deboned poultry meat, the Netherlands, spices, frozen fish and seafood, Hungary, onions and paprika, Norway, spices, Canada, seafood and pork, China, potatoes. Other foods may be irradiated also. Food irradiation has been used illegally to camouflage spoiled seafood for resale. And recently, Canadian regulatory authorities have moved closer to allowing irradiation of red meat and poultry. Australia and New Zealand recently approved irradiation for herbs, spices, and teas. The European Union is trying to harmonize its rules on irradiation now. There are organized anti-irradiation groups in several countries, including Australia, New Zealand, and Japan. And European activists are closely watching the FDA policy on labeling because of world trade and trade regulations. If the FDA stops requiring labels, the United States will be able to force other countries to accept irradiated foods without labels, even if the other country requires labels for its own foods. For this reason, continued required U.S. labeling that is both prominent and accurate is the key to blocking use of irradiation worldwide. So number 14, what strategies are irradiation supporters using to convince you, the public, that irradiation is harmless and, in fact, desirable? First, they use misleading terms such as electronic pasteurization, pasteurization with X-rays, and cold pasteurization. Pasteurization is known to the public as a process of killing microorganisms in milk and other liquids by heating them briefly to a specified temperature. The connotations of pasteurization and irradiation are very different terms because we associate pasteurization with milk, a friendly and benevolent food. The use of pasteurization to meet irradiation is therefore misleading. First and most important, pasteurized dairy is the standard. Most American consumers cannot buy unpasteurized dairy products. We do not notice the word pasteurized because it is the status quo. Irradiation, on the other hand, is a new technology that is not the status quo. Using the term pasteurized gives irradiation an aura of stability and permanence and even friendliness. Some dictionaries list irradiation as a secondary meaning for pasteurization. However, calling irradiated food pasteurized is like calling a person with a second-degree burn suntanned. Irradiated and pasteurized dairy foods are affected differently. Unlike dairy pasteurization, irradiation does not heat the food significantly, and it may last as long as several hours. Dairy bacteria, because free radicals bounce around in the food and penetrate the bacteria's cell walls, these free radicals remain to do more damage to nutrients in the food. Now, secondly, they say that the changes in food caused by irradiation are similar to that caused by cooking food. Well, the problem here is that when we buy fresh food, we expect it to be fresh, with a full complement of vitamins and live enzymes. We don't seek out fresh food, which is usually more expensive than canned or frozen, for second-class nutrition and usually unusable enzymes. Furthermore, similar does not mean exactly the same. We have no long-term experience with a diet of irradiated foods, so we don't know if the long-term effects on human health are similar or dissimilar. Now, see, they tell us that astronauts have eaten irradiated foods, an irrelevant piece of information that unfortunately captivates nearly every journalist when he hears it. These journalists don't bother to check the NASA website where they would find out that exactly two items on the NASA menu is irradiated. That's beefsteak and turkey. Beefsteak and turkey. In addition, the factoid is totally irrelevant. Astronauts are on military missions where they expect health risks greater than civilian life. Unlike us, they eat irradiated foods for a short time, unlike us, and they have been told what they are eating, unlike us. So the astronauts know what is and what is not irradiated. It's plainly marked, and we are eating irradiated foods. We don't know it, and they're not marked for us. D. Now, the only question irradiation advocates consider important is, does the existing scientific research prove that a diet of irradiated foods harms human health? Well, the answer is no. But the existing scientific research is totally inadequate to prove that it is, in fact, safe for human health. Advocates also ignore the equally important issue. Food irradiation is about more than human health. It's about a sustainable food system as well. Irradiation props up industrial animal agriculture, and without irradiation, this system would, in fact, collapse. Now, can airport X-rays harm raw food? So when you're putting your bag through the airport X-ray machine over there, and you've got some raw organic almonds, does the X-ray machine screw up our raw foods that we're taking on board the airplane? No. The dose that is used in an airport X-ray is millions of times less than the dose used on irradiated fruits and vegetables. A few free radicals are created, but on the level of the free radicals that are normally created during storage and ripening or decay. 16. What can I do to help? Well, take a look here at the action sections of our website at www.organicconsumers.org. That's www.organicconsumers.org. And also contact us to be notified of action alerts. 17. I still don't know enough to come to a definite conclusion for or against food irradiation. Well, look at the issue as a whole, not just will it hurt me and to eat irradiated food. Irradiation touches on the ecosystem of food policy. How we want our food to be produced, marketed, owned, how animals are treated, pollution, rural life, and the communities and trade. Perhaps people who support food irradiation are trying to solve a problem caused by the status quo without changing the status quo. They accept our modern factory farming and meat industry deregulation with the resulting sanitation problems. And they're trying to put a Band-Aid on a problem rather than solving the problem. And they want to restrict the debate over food irradiation to the narrow question as to whether there is any science that proves that irradiation harms human health. They don't want to look at the big picture, which is much greater than what is known about irradiation or the effects on human health. Opponents of irradiation, on the other hand, are looking at the big picture. They don't accept the status quo of the meat industry, deregulation, and they want the feces contamination problem solved at the source. They want alternative techniques for food safety to be used. They want to reverse the policies of the USDA since Reagan, which has deregulated meat inspection and led to dirtier meat. They want more environmentally sustainable and human food production methods, better food inspection, and more locally grown food. These goals are blocked if food irradiation is used to keep the status quo. They want government to presume that irradiation is unsafe unless proved otherwise. This is called the precautionary principle. They want labels on all irradiation foods or irradiated foods so that they can know what they are purchasing. They do not want to encourage privatization of nuclear materials, unlike supporters of irradiation. Opponents feel responsible for protecting human health and the environment for everyone, including future generations. So there's the report, frequently asked questions about food irradiation from Organic Consumers Association. I said it was from the FDA. Actually, I've got another report here by the FDA, and they also ask frequently asked questions about food irradiation. Now, here's an analysis of this food irradiation question put out here by the Food Irradiation Project Home. This is a rebuttal of the FDA pamphlet that promotes food irradiation. Our analysis of the FDA-sponsored pamphlet, questions and answers about food irradiation, the text of the pamphlet. When we come to the question on what is food irradiation? Well, food irradiation is a process in which food products are exposed to a controlled amount of radiant energy to kill harmful bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella. The process also controls insects and parasites, reduces spoilage, and inhibits ripening and sprouting. So that's what food irradiation is. It is done by industry to enhance the product's salability, to extend its shelf life. Now, you know when you buy a pair of Levi's? Levi's, unlike strawberries, are not highly perishable. When you're producing a highly perishable product, you need to pick it and get it to market and get it sold as rapidly as possible. So if we could extend the shelf life by just a day, it's very important to a strawberry grower in Salinas, California, who's shipping a truckload of strawberries to Kansas City, Missouri. But on the other hand, if he irradiates those strawberries and he destroys the enzymes, or he destroys half of the vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin D, and et cetera, is he doing the consumer any favor? He's extended the shelf life, and we all like to have longer shelf life, because from the time you buy the strawberries and you take them home and put them in your refrigerator and they start growing mold on them by the next morning, and I can sympathize with that. I do the strawberries here in our home. My wife brings home strawberries either from the local strawberry patch or out of our garden or from some vendor alongside the highway or something along that order, or hell, maybe even from Walmart. And you have to get at them pretty darn fast. You know, it's unlike milk that you can stick in the refrigerator and 3 or 4 days later you can come back. You stick those strawberries in the refrigerators and come back 3 or 4 days later and you've got this white growth. It looks like Santa Claus's beard going from berry to berry. And it's kind of an icky, nasty mess. And it's not very appetizing. And you lose about half your berries, or you just get disgusted and throw them all out and start this over again. So if we could extend the shelf life, God, wouldn't that just be wonderful? Let's just think about it for a moment. You got a strawberry here, and in its natural form, it has as much vitamin C, vitamin A, vitamin D, minerals, and iron, and all of the goodies that strawberry is designed by God to have. The best thing you can do is to walk in the strawberry patch, reach down, pick the berry, stick it in your mouth, and eat it. You just can't get anything fresher, more nutritious. You cannot get any more vitamins and minerals or nutrients out of that berry than you can by picking it and eating it right in the garden. Ah, but you're a lawyer, and you work in New York and live on Long Island. You make a lot of money, and you want to exchange that money for strawberries. So you want somebody else to raise those strawberries for you because you don't want to have to sweat or get dirt under your fingernails in the process of growing berries. Besides, it would take so much time for you to grow those berries, to grow that food, you wouldn't have time to practice law and make the really big bucks. So we Americans prefer to have Mexican workers come into our country and work in our fields to produce the berries and then ship them to New York so that we can buy them in the local store. Makes all the sense in the world. Now, every day that goes by, those berries lose some of their nutritional value. Day one, it loses 10%, day two, 10%, day three, 10%. By day four or five, those berries are about the limit. They're not going to keep very much longer. Now, fortunately, we do have refrigeration, and refrigeration will extend the shelf life. And from experience, we know that the difference between eating the fresh berry in the patch and five-day-old berries with refrigeration is that there is a decreased nutritional value in the berry. We know that. We may not think about how much that nutritional decrease is, but refrigeration, while it extends the shelf life of the berry, does not solve the problem of the loss of vitamins and minerals, the nutrient value, which is the purpose for eating. Do you know why you eat? It's to give your body these essential nutrients that it has to have to continue life. And if you deprive your body of those essential nutrients, like vitamin A, you go blind. Or vitamin B, you die of a heart attack. Or vitamin C, you get scurvy. And so on down the line. So each one of these vitamins or minerals or proteins or enzymes, they're nutrients that we all have to have. And the longer the shelf life, the greater the economic value of the product, but the less nutritional value that product has. So the trick in food is you want to pick it and eat it as fresh as possible. Pick it and eat it just as fresh as you can. Just as soon as you can from the time that you kill it. And you kill it when you pick it. Now, of course, the Armor Star people come along and they say, well, we've got a problem with our meat because our meat has salmonella in it. And we sell it to Jack in the Box. Jack in the Box serves it to a customer. That customer gets sick, goes to the hospital. Sometimes they die, and there's a wrongful death action against the Jack in the Box hamburger chain, and they turn around and sue the Armor Star people, and we have to pay out millions of dollars in product liability suits, and we don't want to do that. I don't blame them. I wouldn't want to do it either. And most Americans do not want to work. They do not want to produce their own food. They want to live their lives in air-conditioned luxury, watching television, eating bonbons, and filing their fingernails in front of the TV. Now, that's the way Americans want to live. Hang on. Let's give you a reminder, and we'll be back with more on irradiated foods when we come back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the law school website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free package, just call the law school and ask for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And then the last item here, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct 417-273-4967. Okay, we're looking at an analysis of these 17 quotations that come from the frequently asked questions about food irradiation. Well, now, when we take a look at this statement, it is crafted to mislead the public. Now, radiant energy sounds like sunlight. In fact, irradiated food is treated with high-speed energy beams that, unlike sunlight, ionize molecules. The free radicals caused by this ionizing radiation ricochet through the food and damage the DNA in bacteria, insects, and the food itself. These free radicals are believed to be the common cancer promoters. That is, they promote the second stage developments that turn the initially damaged cells into malignant cancerous cells. Microwaves do not harm the food in the same way as does irradiation. In microwaving, food is cooked by heating the water in the molecules. The DNA in the food is not broken. Ionizing radiation includes gamma rays from nuclear materials, electrons from electron guns, and X-rays from X-ray machines. So food irradiation is a process in which food products are exposed to a controlled amount of radiant energy to kill harmful bacteria such as E. coli and Salmonella, which, remember, is caused by feces in the food. It's dirty food that we need to clean up. Should we clean it up or should we irradiate it? Now, the process also controls insects and parasites, reduces spoilage, and inhibits ripening and sprouting. Well, if we're going to inhibit the ripening and sprouting, then we interfere with the natural processes that occur in food, such as the growth of the enzymes which cause the ripening. So we kill the enzymes so that the food doesn't ripen. Are you really sure we want to do that? Is irradiated food safe? Well, the Food and Drug Administration has evaluated the safety of this technology over the last 40 years, and they found irradiation to be safe and has approved its use for many foods. Scientific studies have shown that irradiation does not significantly reduce nutritional quality or change food taste, texture, or appearance. Irradiated foods do not become radioactive. American astronauts have eaten irradiated foods since the 1970s, and patients with weak immune systems are sometimes fed irradiated foods to reduce the chances of infection. Well, here's the comment. Well, there are many errors and omissions in this statement. First, the pamphlet implies erroneously that the FDA has both continuously evaluated scientific studies over the last 40 years and that they have found a uniform record of safety. Take a look at our section on food irradiation resources for the numerous problems and deficiencies in the FDA's review of the science. Second, that statement implies that the FDA has found irradiation to be safe for all foods. In fact, in 1968, the FDA retracted its 1963 approval of bacon because animals fed irradiated bacon showed adverse health effects. Third, irradiation does reduce nutritional quality. Even people who support irradiation agree that vitamins are lost, particularly the antioxidant vitamins A, E, C, and K, which are necessary to counteract free radicals. The amount of vitamin loss varies with the food and the length of storage. So whether this is a significant or not loss depends on the food or its importance in a person's diet and whether people get the vitamin from other foods. The FDA has not stated what its baseline diet consists of. Children in particular may eat large quantities of the same food. And vitamin loss in this food could be very significant in that child's diet. In poor countries where staple crops like wheat or potatoes could be irradiated, the problem of vitamin loss would be very significant. Now you take people that eat a lot of rice. What if you irradiate their rice and half their diet is composed of rice and you've destroyed half the vitamins in half of their diet? That's pretty significant. Now if you're in a wealthy country or like the United States and you eat a wide variety of foods, maybe it's not so important. But again, as I mentioned earlier, the very purpose for eating food is to get the vitamins and the nutrients out of it. Americans do not eat because they want vitamins and minerals. They eat because it's recreation. It's like going to the movies. You don't go to the movies because you're hungry for popcorn and Junior Mints. You go to the movies and you eat the popcorn and the Junior Mints because it's part of the recreational activity that goes along with viewing a movie. Now, it used to be in this country, when you sat down at dinner, mother was very concerned about the kind of food that she was feeding her family, in the same way that a farmer today is very concerned about what kind of feed he feeds his cows. We farmers know that the better the diet for the cow, the more milk the cow gives. And the poorer the diet, the less milk she gives. And naturally, we want to feed our cows very well, but we don't have the same concern about our children that we do for our cattle. After all, the kid goes to the store and he throws a wall-eyed fit, screaming in the aisles of the supermarket, crying for sugar-blasted Cocoa Puffs. And you say, okay, kid, get up off the floor. Here, I'm going to buy you the sugar-coated Cocoa Puffs. Nobody ever looks at the label to say, well, what in the hell is in this box of sugar-coated Cocoa Puffs? What nutritional value? Is this thing full of vitamin C? Is this thing filled with enzymes and proteins? I've never seen anybody get real concerned about that. However, if you take that prepared cereal and you give it to a group of rats, and that's all you give them for 6 weeks, they'll starve to death. They'll die. You feed a rat white bread, and in 6 weeks, the rat will be dead. And that's because there's not enough nutritional value in white bread to keep the rat alive. I'm sure the rat prefers the white bread over whole wheat. Maybe it even tastes better. Maybe it goes down better with hot milk or cocoa. I don't know. Probably tastes real good. I had a can of chocolate pudding today. God, the stuff was just delicious. I loved every bite. I wish that broccoli and Brussels sprouts tasted like chocolate pudding. It doesn't. And the nutritional value of the chocolate pudding is just right at zero. It's a filler. Once in a while, you can eat a can of chocolate pudding because it tastes real good. A little bit of recreational food is probably okay. I like to eat a little popcorn once in a while, drowned in butter, and a lot of salt on it. So I try to be real nutritious and real healthy. I use my own butter, which is unpasteurized, and then I use that North Sea salt so that I'm not eating straight sodium chloride. And then I try to eat organic popcorn. And probably for recreational eating, that's not too bad. But when it gets down to the purpose for eating food, boys and girls, is to put vitamins and minerals in your body to build strong, healthy cells so that you don't come down with cancer, rheumatism, arthritis, heart attack, or stroke. That's the purpose for eating. Now, when you interfere with that process, you've got good, nutritious food. Let's assume that you've got really good stuff to start with, and then you irradiate it, and you destroy half the vitamins and minerals. And that's what these articles zero in on. What is the destruction of the vitamins and minerals? It approaches 50%. I keep saying minerals. It doesn't destroy the minerals. It destroys the vitamins and the enzymes, 50%. That's what's wrong with it. That's the first thing that's wrong with it. Second, it creates these free radicals. It creates compounds in the food that are associated with the free radicals that attack your cells, break them down, and create weak cells that then become malignant and turn to cancer. Food irradiation did not create cancer, didn't cause cancer, but it exacerbates the cancer problem, and it doesn't do anything to stop it. It exacerbates it. It makes it worse. It didn't create it, didn't start it, but it makes it worse. So our common sense ought to tell us we ought not to eat it. Now, fourth, it is likely that the natural digestive enzymes in food are significantly damaged. Enzymes are long proteins that are affected by the free radical fragmentation bombs created by irradiation. The presence of enzymes is the most critical nutritional difference between raw food and cooked food. I'm going to pause right there and tell you that cancer is called the cooked food disease. Now, listen up, boys and girls, let me tell you a little wisdom here. When you come down with cancer, you are full of parasites. Number one, get rid of the parasites. Number two, stop eating all cooked food, eat all raw food, and the cancer will go away. That's what Ann Wigmore discovered 50 years ago, and she came up with this wheatgrass regime. Now they call it barley green or green magma. Now, irradiated food that is meant to be eaten raw is a danger to public health, and when unlabeled, it is a deliberate fraud to the consumer. Well, I don't know if it's a deliberate fraud to the consumer. I've already mentioned to you, from my firsthand observation and years of observing, when you go into a supermarket like Walmart, and they've got 8,000 or 10,000 products on the shelf. Now, most of those products are food products in the grocery store. You go through and you read the labels, and you take a look at the processes by which this food has been put into those bins and shelves. And I said it yesterday, and I'm going to say it again today. If there's anything in the modern American supermarket that is good for human health and nutrition, I don't know what it is or where it would be located in there. I'm not saying that there isn't anything in there that isn't good for human health, but I don't know where it's at. Now, there might be in some new modern American supermarket some health food sections. I mean, hell, there might be some actual spots in there. They're selling some highly nutritious organic foods. So they might have an organic section. They might have a section that they don't irradiate, they don't have any GMOs in, and that they don't have any sprays, dyes, and chemicals on the food, and it might actually be edible. Maybe it's even fresh and is loaded with vitamins and minerals. There might be a spot out of that 100,000 or 2 million square feet or whatever the hell that monster box has in there. There might be a spot. But here in the local area, I haven't seen one. If you want good food, you're going to have to spend some time going out looking for it. For instance, every once in a while I kill a cow, and every once in a while somebody buys that cow from me, and they take it home and they put it in their locker. We only butcher one cow once in a while. I hang her up out here in a tree, out in the open, and we constantly keep washing it off. And I'm very careful when I eviscerate the cow that I don't cut it open and get manure on the meat. They don't do that in the big meatpacking plants. It's an assembly line process, and I mean there is feces everywhere. There is dirt and blood. And there's all kinds of, and here's another thing, you know, the cows that go through there, I had one here come out this way. She had cancer. She was just full. I don't know what happened to this cow. It's the only one I've ever had like her. But she got into something, and we cut her open, and she was just full of cancer or some kind of malignant growth. If it wasn't cancer, it was something that was really nasty. So as soon as we opened her up, I let the cow down on the ground, and I drug her down in the woods and let the coyotes eat her. I wouldn't eat it, and I wouldn't give it to anybody else to eat. Didn't look fit to eat to me. But if that cow was in a big meatpacking plant, they would cut that malignant disease out. And they would make bypass protein out of that and feed it back to animals. The rest of it they would grind up for hamburger and feed it to you. And if they find a cyst or something like that, they'll cut that cyst out. If they don't get all of it, they'll just grind it up for hamburger and send it off to the hamburger joint. Now, the meat supply that goes out of these big industrial plants, my personal opinion is that stuff's not fit for man or beast. I wouldn't feed that to my dog. I wouldn't want my dog to get the kinds of diseases and the filth in them, of which I'm gonna pet that dog and he's gonna lick my hand. I wouldn't want that on my hand. Now that's just me, maybe, but that's the way I am. But I produce a clean product, and what we depend on here is not irradiation. It's not how do I kill the salmonella in the meat. It's how do you produce this meat so that it's clean and wholesome and natural, so that there isn't any salmonella in it to start with. I know it's a wild new concept, but from the time I was a little kid, that's the way we used to butcher. We didn't get our meat out of the meat market. We killed our own, or we bought one from somebody that killed it just like that. Had old Dedini come out there and do the butchering. If you can't butcher your own, you call a professional butcher. He comes out there, he kills one cow. We're not trying to do a cow a minute. Now, there's a big factory up here in Iowa, and there's a hide that comes out of a chute every 15 seconds. A hide out of a chute every 15 seconds. That's four cows a minute. Four cows a minute. Now, they're killing, they're butchering four cows a minute. That's 240 cows an hour. I went by one big meatpacking plant, looked out in the parking lot, and there were about 200 cars in the parking lot. Well, that tells me that there's probably 200 people working in that plant. And I don't know if it's this big plant I'm describing to you here. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But, you know, when you get 200 people working in here, and these people are all doing their little thing on this carcass as it goes by, it's an assembly line process. What we've done is we've taken agriculture and we've turned it into a mechanical. We've turned it into an industrial process. And agriculture is a biological process. It's not a mechanical. It's not an industrial process. It's biological. And you've got to be real careful about how you prepare food. So I don't like to eat in restaurants. I'm not really sure that the people that are in the back room over there wash their hands every time they go to the bathroom. You know, that's kind of important. Health and hygiene is very important, boys and girls. And if we're being fed food that's full of feces, that's not very healthy and it's not very hygienic. I'm just telling you. And that's the reason for this process. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any need for it. You know, when I go down here and pick a head of lettuce out of my garden, there isn't any need for us to irradiate it. We don't have any feces on it. We don't have people running around urinating on the lettuce, defecating down in the garden, don't wash their hands, and then pick the lettuce and bring it in the house. We don't have that. We wouldn't allow that here. Now, these big industrial operations, you know, do that. And I think that it's worth noting here in this article, this series of articles here on irradiated food, that the purpose for irradiation is to cover up the filth that's in that food. So if the food is irradiated, it's dirty food, or we wouldn't be irradiating it. Can you get any plainer than that? Then fifth, the FDA is simply lying when they say that irradiation does not change food taste, texture, or appearance. Many studies have shown that irradiation can produce such changes. For example, irradiated ground beef can have the aroma of a wet dog, and irradiated melons can be mushy. To combat these problems, food scientists manipulate the irradiation dose and other variables, such as packaging, to produce an acceptable food. Foods with a low tolerance for irradiation are simply not irradiated. Irradiated fats easily become rancid because the free radicals oxidize the fats. For this reason, fatty foods are irradiated only if they're likely to be cooked or used within a short time. Sixth, induced radioactivity is possible at 10 MeV. That's the maximum permitted dose for fruits and vegetables, but it diminishes during storage. And seventh, the statement about astronauts is irrelevant. They're military people on a military mission who expect to be exposed to greater risks than the civilian population, and their acceptance of irradiated food should be seen as part of their acceptance of that risk. You know, when you take a look at these statements that are put out by the government, then you take it apart and you analyze it a little bit. I mean, here's where the reality of it is. How does irradiation work? Well, food is packed, they tell us, in containers and moved by conveyor belt into a shielded room where the food is exposed briefly to a radiant energy source. The amount of energy depends on the food. The energy waves passing through the food breaks molecular bonds in the DNA of bacteria, pathogens, and insects. The food is left unchanged, but the number of harmful bacteria, parasites, and fungi is reduced. Notice it's not eliminated, but it's reduced. The food irradiation symbol, the radura, is required by the FDA on all irradiated food with the words treated with radiation or treated by irradiation. Here's your OCA comment. First, again, the FDA misleads the public by using the term radiant energy source instead of ionizing energy source. Second, the FDA does not mention that energy waves passing through the food also break the molecular bonds in the food itself. And third is an outright lie. The food is not left unchanged. Irradiation creates free radicals, damaged DNA, damaged vitamins and enzymes, and it is impossible for energy waves to break the DNA of bacteria and insects and not break the DNA of the food itself, which causes this changed compound which emits the free radicals. Fourth, an extremely misleading statement that verges on a lie. And that is, the assertion that all irradiated food is labeled. The consumer who reads this thinks that they will always know if their food has been irradiated. I've already shown you that's not true. Yes, it is true that all irradiated food is labeled, but only to the first purchaser, which can be the restaurant. The restaurant does not tell you how much irradiated food you're eating. The school, the hospital, the airline, or the food processor, they do not have to tell you anything about what that food is or whether it's been irradiated or not. None of these institutions or companies are required to label irradiated food to the consumer. In addition, when consumer labels are required, for example, on a bag of potatoes, the required wording may be as small as the typeface on the ingredient label. That is, it's in fine print so that you can't see it, boys and girls. And it can be on the back of the package. Produce sold by the piece is supposed to be labeled on the display or on the fruit itself, but there's no enforcement, and there's no specific size for the display label. Consumers are not adequately notified by existing labeling requirements. And the food industry groups have been pressuring Congress to require the FDA to remove all of these labels. The industry groups have been pressuring Congress to get rid of the labels that are on there. Now, why is it that the industry doesn't want you to see that this food is irradiated? Huh? Is it because they know that a certain number of us out there, if we knew it, wouldn't buy it? Well, all right, boys and girls, we're about out of time again. I got to leave it right there. We'll be back here tomorrow with more on this thing of irradiated foods. Stand by. You haven't heard all this story yet. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And for more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call The Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you tomorrow night, same time, same station. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.